You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of May 29th, 2026. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we're still in countdown mode. The final countdown! Because this is the 995th episode of the Professional Left Podcast with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And so it's not the final countdown, because it's 995.
It's nearly the final countdown.
Almost.
Yeah.
And we hope everybody had a safe and peaceful Memorial Day, mm-hmm. and that you guys didn't take it personally that we took a day off on Tuesday.
Yeah.
We did celebrate the graduation of youngest child.
We did. Week. It was a glorious thing. And
glorious, glorious.
The reverberations are still being felt around the globe. So
quite a milestone for us, though, I will say.
Yeah. And we had family in and.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, we had a wonderful time. It's
wonderful
good to
time.
See, good to see everybody. If you've been listening to us for more than a minute, you will know that except for our many fine fake sponsors who will be making glorious returns over the course of the next few months, we are ad-free and 100% listener supported. That means you guys. You guys support everything we do, and we really appreciate that. And that at the end of every episode, we will tell you about our gourmet coffee guidelines, which, you know, is the if you're able to treat yourself to an espresso-based beverage, please consider buying us one as well. This isn't charity, which it definitely is not. And then we direct you to patreon.com/proleftpod or to Venmo, where you can look up The Professional Left. Well,
and
today,
also go to ProLeftPod and our address is there to mail us stuff.
Right there.
PayPal link, all that stuff is there.
If you've made it all the way into 2 minutes of this podcast, you've heard our address and P.O. Box and so forth mentioned by yours truly.
True.
So there's many, many ways to reach out to us. Well, today we're going to switch it around just a little bit because there are a couple of big names with deep pockets who definitely owe us at least $5. So this is targeted to them.
They owe Driftglass $5. This is a running joke in our house when we see something that is clearly inspired by Steven Spielberg. They owe Steven Spielberg $5 or they owe Quentin Tarantino $5.
And if you could see my workplace, my work desk, the number of dumpster fire tchotchkes that have been sent to me over the years is both heartening.
By listeners.
Yeah, is heartening and a little bit like, oh, more salt for the wound. Yay.
Because, let's start with a dramatic reading from Paul Krugman's latest newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And his article is entitled, quote, "The Dumpster Fire of the Vanities. America descends into a flattery failure doom loop," unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we love you, Paul Krugman, but come on. You got to open that coin purse of yours and send a little bit of it to Driftglass, coiner of the term dumpster fire, which is why people keep mailing him dumpster fires.
Mm-hmm.
You got to send that $5 care of the Professional Left and the addresses at the beginning of the show. And trust me, you'll sleep easier.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I know that Nobel Prize weighs heavily on your conscience. you feel maybe you didn't deserve it. So, you know, ease your conscience just a little bit by throwing a little cash our way.
But then Krugman gets to the over-the-top sycophancy Trump is shown by leading Republicans and the party base, which is completely detached from reality.
Yeah. And he's absolutely right about this. And then comes a chunk that could have come right out of our very own No Fair Remembering Stuff feature. Quote, "But Trump isn't the first public figure to seek self-aggrandizement in an attempt to fill his inner emptiness. The important question is why the American right, not just his pathetic cabinet, but the whole movement, including six extremist Republicans on the Supreme Court, has been so willing to empower him. And that's a question much bigger than Trump himself." Huh. "The truth is that the right-wing attempt to build a cult of personality around a deeply unpresidential figure, while it has reached new levels of absurdity under Trump, isn't new. Republicans tried to do the same thing for George W. Bush. Do you remember this?" Unquote.
And then in his newsletter, he's got a picture of George W. Bush in his cosplay flight suit. Krugman then continues, quote, "And readers of a certain age may recall that the Wright's canonization of Ronald Reagan began while he was still in office." Krugman continues again, "It's tempting to dismiss personality cult theater as trivial, but it isn't. When prominent people in the Republic act as if they were living in a monarchy, the Republic increasingly becomes a monarchy in reality. Why has the American modern right abandoned the idea of a constitutional republic and embraced rule by strongman? Good question, and one I'll try to answer another day," unquote.
Which is a sweet OG blogger cliffhanger move there, Paul. That's very nice. Well done. We know you know your internet traditions. Yes. And here he continues, quote, "For now, let me just point out that while it may seem ironic that so much praise and power has been lavished on Trump, America's most incompetent modern president, the combination of flattery and failure isn't an accident. Huh. It is, in fact, a self-reinforcing doom loop. The point is that the dire strait we're in, the leader of the free world, has turned against freedom. The greatest power the world has ever known is self-immolating before our eyes. Isn't just a matter of Donald Trump's personal failings. It's the culmination of decades of right-wing sabotage of everything that made America great." Brother, you are never
going to... Unquote.
I'm sorry. But brother, you are never going to get yourself invited on stage at one of the Bulwarks or the PodSafe Lads call and response rallies with an attitude like that.
It's true. You might be blackballed even.
Yeah. Well, just we'd love to have you, Mr. Krugman. Paul, can we see your Nobel Prize? That'd be lovely. However, we would appreciate it if you wouldn't mention anything that happened before, say, 2017. That would be mm-hmm. great. You just do that. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. And then Paul says, "I have suits older than you guys." Okay.
True that.
And anyway, speaking of the Bulwark, just a couple of days ago, a Bulwark employee named Jonathan V. Last announced that one of the two or three words he despises more than any other in the English language is the word...
controversial?
Controversial, baby.
Oh, he doesn't get to do that.
Now, it's true. It's true that we are just a tiny podcast, a wee little podcast out here in flyover country, and we're aware the folks with the big megaphones have grand plans within plans of which we are unaware.
You stand in the way not merely of an individual, but of a mighty organization, the full extent of which even you, with all your cleverness, have been unable to realize.
However, that does not mean you can just throw Blue Gal trademark phrases around and get away with it. Cannot let that happen. Or the next thing you know, they'll be mocking what, Blue Gal? What are you supposed to be mocking next?
I'm an independent.
Damn right.
The dude minds. This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
And now, with business out of the way, it's time to talk seriously about pronouns. Specifically, pronouns as markers of how recent political history can be distorted and whitewashed to the point where it becomes unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Driftglass? I think maybe you've blogged about this a time or two in the past, 20 years?
Yeah, I see you stroking your chin amusedly. Yes, indeed, I have. I have, in fact, made a special study of shifting pronouns. I've written a monograph upon the subject, in fact. And a gold star to anyone who can identify where I ripped off that sentence.
Oh, I think we all know.
Everybody. You're all very smart. You know where that's from.
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, yep. Baby. Now, it all began back in the closing days of the before time, Blue Gal. This is from my very own blog in January of 2016. This is me talking way back when.
Wait a minute. That's before Trump was elected.
It is. It's, in fact,
before
he was nominated, Blue Gal, when he was just a glint in the eyes of the great Satan. Now that Donald Barnum Trump and fail gunner Ted Cruz, remember him, and the caravan of benighted shouty cracker GOP candidate wannabes that follow them around have removed any lingering doubt that nothing short of the destroying the village to save it option will ever fix what's actually wrong with the GOP, the Republican establishment's most obedient and reliable public avatars have suddenly all come down with the same tragic affliction, Blue Gal. Republican detachment disorder. Symptoms include adopting the basic liberal critique of the right, chapter and verse, while forgetting to acknowledge that liberals as such even exist, and pretending that the Republican establishment is some mysterious directorate that you barely know, which meets in a secret lair far, far away, instead of a club which you've been a card-carrying member of for your entire adult life. Now, today's spotlight, this is 2016 in January, for Republican Detachment Disorder Sufferer is Mr. David Frum. This is David Frum writing in the year 2016 in January, quote, "Maybe the Republican establishment can't have it all. Given their..." Yeah.
Who is David Frum?
Yeah.
He's not the Republican establishment.
You sort of hit the nail on the head there, Blue Gal.
I can't.
Oh, but you must. We must continue.
But I must. Apparently, I must.
You must. this is Mr. Frum again, back in 2016. Given their failure to take down Trump, it's time for the GOP elites to let go of some cherished inward-facing policy priorities, ? Unquote. Notice how Republican detachment disorder particularly affects the speech centers of the brain. Now it's the Republican establishment instead of we. And given their failure instead of given our failure. And the party elites instead of me and David Brooks and Michael Gerson and Ross Douthat and the rich fuckers we work for.
Yeah, who are the elites if not David Frum?
There's some other group of elites over there, Blue Gal, and those guys are a lot of trouble, let me tell you.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And eventually, Driftglass, in your writing, you simplified this to, it's a huge shit sandwich and everybody but me is going to have to take a bite.
Yeah. Yeah.
From then on, distancing themselves from the party they had built or just removing the word Republican altogether became endemic in Republican politics.
And remind me, Blue Gal, if you will, what was the word Republican or Republicanism replaced with back then?
Yeah, Driftglass, it was being replaced. They tried really hard to replace it with Trumpism. And they're doing it with MAGA Republicans also. Like making
they're not Republicans.
They're MAGA Republicans.
That's right.
But Trumpism was a big deal in the summer of 2016 to really try to separate every other Republican running that year from Trump. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about this that summer. The summer of 2016, before Trump was elected, I wrote about Trumpism for Crooks and Liars. And I called my article, "Don't You Dare Call It Trumpism." The inspiration for my post was a CNN focus group of Republican voters from the previous year, July of 2015. Now that's, even before the primaries. Trump was running. He had announced he'd gone down the escalator.
Yep.
And CNN was fascinated and interviewing panel discussions of Trump supporters or sort of Trump supporters.
Later, they would go to diners in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Right,
but
right.
Now they brought him to the studio.
They brought him to the studio, July of 2015. And everyone there was in this panel was singing the praises of Donald Trump. And my article, Don't You Dare Call It Trumpism, had the subtitle, "The Media is Attempting to Separate the Republican Party from Donald Trump. Who voted for him again?"
Yeah.
Have you noticed a number of media outlets, this is me quoting me, calling the Republican campaign for president Trumpism?
Yeah, weird.
I cited the National Memo, Howard Kurtz on Fox, and Nicole Wallace on MSNBC, all doing it. And then I said, it isn't Trumpism. It's the Republican Party. And it has been for far longer than Donald Trump has been running for president. So I had the CNN focus group video from July of 2015 at the top of my post. It was Allison Camerota of CNN, formerly of Fox, asking a focus group of Trump and leaning toward Trump voters, why do you like him?
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who have watched any of these average Trump voter interviews know their trademarks. He speaks his mind and says what I am already thinking. Yeah, illegal immigration is the number one issue on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll make America great again. The reason the news media interviewed these particular people is they are registered Republican primary voters. They are registered Republicans. They didn't just register to vote this year or fall off a truck and say, hey, I'm a Republican. They voted for Bush twice, George W. Bush. They voted for McCain Palin. They voted for Romney. And they're tired of losing and being embarrassed by their votes. So embarrassed that they fell for a Tea Party rebranding just so they would not have to associate themselves with George W. Bush. And then the Republican establishment, the party leaders, if you will, had the nerve to suggest that they might vote for Bush's brother, Jeb. Donald Trump lies about a lot of things, but he is not lying when he says he received more Republican primary votes than any other candidate in U.S. history. That statistic is skewed by how many Republicans voted against Trump or not Trump. But the fact that the race boiled down to Trump versus not Trump is not helpful to the Trumpism argument, because it was Republican voters who selected Trump as their candidate in primary after primary, in state after state. Now, as I said in this article, the Beltway news media is terrified that the Republican Party will be forever tarnished by this Trump candidacy.
Wow.
I wrote 10 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Because Trump as Republican busts open their both sides myth that both sides of the political spectrum are equally bad, equally wrong and right, equally to be blamed for the mess in Washington. And you still see that today, Driftglass.
Oh, by the way,
voters want to believe that Democrats are just as bad or worse.
Well, they have to. We've done many podcasts about this, but if you want to look up one, look for the Quantum Entanglement podcast about how it's become so drilled into their heads that both sides are bad that it doesn't matter what Republicans do. Democrats' popularity is going to track with Republicans, not be the opposite of it.
Right. Right. And this was the end of it. Both siderism protects the Beltway's need for an election horse race, as well as that magical view from nowhere. Looking at you, Peter Baker of the New York fucking Times, in which the media is outside the race altogether and just an observer of the process. We're just reporting, Driftglass. We're not in it. We're not running call-ins from Trump every other week.
No.
We're just observing the process.
That's right. Just calling balls and strikes, Blue Gal.
Yes. But both siderism picks a goddamn side every time. It picks the side that is willing to lie repeatedly to win elections.
Yeah.
Unquote. Excuse me. I unquote myself.
Unquote. Yes. And when Republican primary voters emphatically rejected every other candidate and nominated Donald Trump in historic numbers, and when Trump was elected by 63 million Republican voters, then that, by definition, makes it Republicanism. Because if a party isn't the people in the party, then what the hell is it? And yet, because the media elites and conservative thought leaders have been lying to themselves and the rest of the world about the true nature of their own voters forever, the reaction from those media elites and conservative thought leaders was a concerted effort to consciously uncouple what was happening in the Republican Party at that moment from what had been going on with the Republican Party during the 50 years that had led up to that moment. You know the first lines from the Longfellow poem, "I shot an arrow into the air. It fell to earth, Blue Gal, I knew not where."
We've done a lot of podcasts on Fox News, too.
Yes, we have.
Fox News and Rush Limbaugh are something that the Republican elite of David Brooks and David Frum simply don't want to admit was their party.
Right.
Ever.
It was a fringe. It didn't matter. Yeah. Just ignore them. Just look away. They're not really there. They have no effect on anything.
Congratulations, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Fox News now populates 40 positions within the Trump White House.
Yeah. Way to go, man.
And none of them are qualified to be there. Except that they're on Fox, which is, they're on Fox and they're loyal to Trump.
That's all they need. It's Karl Rove's permanent Republican majority. You know, congratulations.
It's Pete Hegseth running the Defense Department. Yeah. Right down the line, it was like that, except they would never even admit they'd shot the arrow, Driftglass. They didn't shoot the arrow into the air. They didn't start it. Instead, one prominent Republican slash conservative after another deployed the same lies in the same order, that the Republican Party had gone spontaneously mad the moment Donald Trump went down the escalator.
Right.
That they had nothing to do with it.
Right.
And that once they caught wind of it, they'd righteously rebuked everyone involved. But before that moment, there was nothing detectably wrong with the Republican Party.
No, that lie has to be true, or else everything they believe in and said since then is a lie. Mm-hmm. They have to die with that lie. And every one of these lies was and is ludicrous on its face. You know, the people spreading those lies were invited to spout them on the largest legacy media outlets in the country, while those on the left, who'd been warning for fucking decades about the dangerous trajectory of the GOP, were given the stiff arm and the stink eye by those same legacy media outlets. So you got to ask yourself, why? Why were all of us put in the corner and all of them given microphones?
Well, Rick West, I hate to tell you this, but the answer is pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's two parts to it. One, the creators of this mythology already had deep ties to major Beltway media outlets. They all knew each other professionally and socially. So once places like MSNBC went full time into the Republican reputation rehab business, GOP spin doctors and comms people and ad merchants who had bet wrong on the rise of Trump and fallen from grace from the party were lining up three deep to get that Nicole Wallace treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And second, the gauzy, heroic nonsense these never-Trumpers were selling was much more congenial to the Beltway media's self-image than the hard truths lefty writers and podcasts were offering. I would also add that you're never allowed on these outlets to call voters stupid or racist.
No, you never, never, ever call the deplorables deplorable.
Yeah, because advertisers hate that. We're trying to sell dick pills over here.
Yeah.
And in the actual history of the era that liberals were documenting, the media was deeply complicit in the rise of a monster like Trump. The empty lectern, running it for half hour after half hour after half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Spending decades ostentatiously ignoring what was going on in the right. All of the racism of the Obama administration. Coming directed. From the base voters.
Yeah, directed at the Obama administration.
Directed at Obama.
Yeah.
From Republican voters.
Mm-hmm.
Or when the stench of racism and crazy leaking out of the GOP containment got too knock the flies off a shit wagon strong to ignore, they'd both sides do it, hand wave any concerns. Because campus speech codes.
Right.
Are exactly the same as calling Barack Obama on a sign in broad daylight, a lion African is, and, you know, worse signs than that, is the same as campus speech codes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this is a story the establishment media, that story of actual Republican voters is something they want no part of at all.
But you understand that the fiction the Never Trumpers were selling, right? That the entire Republican base just went suddenly nuts one day. And no one could have seen it coming, Blue Gal. Completely unpredictable black swan event that maybe a lot of it was actually justifiable backlash to all those terrible imaginary excesses on the left. You know, the radical left, the extreme left. That was a story the Beltway media was only too happy to metabolize, to repeat endlessly, and to promote in front, to the front of the line, any recently former Republican who was willing to help them sell that story.
And we did a very long piece recently about defund the police.
Yeah.
And how much media airtime that got.
Yeah. How it became what every Democrat was running on and every Democrat must defend, because gigantic megaphone on the right and so much help from the so much enabling of that lie by the legacy media.
Mm-hmm. Instead of calling it out as bullshit.
Right, because they don't want to be called liberal and have a mob show up at their door tearing the place down. So they're just willing to pass that along as a controversial opinion that both sides have maybe something to do with. And of course, over the last decade, you can actually track as this bullshit hardened into the foundation of Beltway-approved, agreed-upon history of the era, which drove us crazy because we watched as it happened and shouted against it every minute. Then, once the foundation was laid, came all of the refinements and the embellishments that came later in time.
But let's start where we left off, Driftglass. In 2016, specifically, Tucker Carlson in Politico. Politico? In January 28th, 2016, quote, Donald Trump is shocking, vulgar, and right. And my dear fellow Republicans, he's all your fault, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And that was supposed to be daring.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's pointing to the Republicans and blaming them for Trump, but keeping himself and his Fox News position out of it.
Yeah.
Yes, dear listener, you heard that correctly. It's all your fault, not all our fault. We're not going to blame himself or Fox. Carlson's entire Norman Bates goes Norma Ray column was positively overflowing with the hilarious pathologies of Republican detachment disorder. Mm.
And then there was this in The Atlantic from January 30th, 2016, quote, Rush Limbaugh doesn't know he's part of the establishment. A portrait of a man who is unaware of his role in the system that he savages, unquote. It was all the rage, kids. All the cool kids were doing it.
On February 13th, 2016, fucking Frank Luntz actually said this on Twitter, quote, Seriously, this is insane. The GOP is destroying itself tonight, and they have no one to blame but themselves, mm-hmm. unquote. Now, this was probably a debate night, I'm assuming.
I have no idea.
But Frank Luntz was in the ear of many of the Republican candidates on the debate stage.
Well,
with Trump.
And Frank Luntz was instrumental in all of the shit that led up to Trump being the nominee. Trump.
It is entirely his fault. Your fault, Frank Luntz.
Yeah. Oh,
your
not fault. Me. I'm an opinion guy. Frank Luntz was one of the organizers of the caucus room meeting the day Obama was inaugurated to try to sabotage Obama by any means necessary. Frank Luntz was up to his fake beard in this.
Newt Gingrich organized it.
And yet it's those Republicans over there, that other party way over there. This was the same week, by the way, that David Brooks, you know, the world's most ubiquitous conservative public intellectual, that globe-trotting lecturer on character and humility and patient zero of Republican derangement and detachment disorder, he managed to write an entire column about the madness which had killed his Republican Party without ever mentioning the word Republican at all.
That's a gift.
That's why he's hired. That's why they pay him the big bucks.
Why they pay him the big bucks. Mm-hmm. After that, it was Ron Fournier and Michael Gerson in March, Joe Scarborough in April, Peggy Noonan and Jennifer Rubin in May, which was a key month since May 26th, 2016 was the day Donald Trump clinched the Republican nomination.
Yeah. And in June of 2016, it was Ramesh Panuru, who you might remember as the author of The Party of Death, The Democrats, The Media, The Courts, and The Disregard for Human Life. And you were wondering whatever became of Ramesh Panuru while we were
Google
talking.
Him because we thought he dropped off the face of the earth and Driftglass went, no, I'll bet he's got some sweet, sweet paying job somewhere.
Yeah,
Looked it up and he's editor of the National Review.
Of course he is. Of course he is. Because these people, this is the thing, they never, ever get fired. That's how the Never Trumpers came to be dominating cable news. Yeah. They all know each other. They're all friends with each other.
And they're never going to allow any of them to go without health insurance.
Right. And as long as they have friends in the business who are willing to give them unlimited free airtime to take what liberals have been saying all this time and turn it into their own, then they will never be out of work. Now, in June of that same year, 2016, I wrote a really long post titled, Suddenly There Is No I in Republican. And this is me, quote unquote, note the time, almost exactly a decade ago, all of these conservative heavy hitters and dozens of others were radically rewriting recent political history and their own political pronouns, and nobody was writing about it. Well, one person was.
July 2016 was another important month. That was when the Republican Party officially nominated Donald Trump as their candidate for president. And actually, it was the end of July that I wrote that "Don't you dare call it Trumpism" post. Yeah.
At that moment, it wasn't going to be Rubio, blue gal.
All of a sudden, it wasn't Rubio.
It's not Rubio.
It was going to be Rubio. David Brooks insisted it's going to be Rubio.
It's going to be Rubio. Don't worry. It's going to be Rubio. By September of 2016, George Will thought he'd caught a glimpse of the Republican Party once a long time ago at a luncheon at Julius Caesar's villa, but he couldn't swear to it.
On October 20, 2016, Joe Scarborough and Bill Kristol got into a hilarious, "This wasn't my fault, this was your fault," finger-pointing slap fight on live television.
Yeah.
And it was something to behold. It's up at Crooks and Liars if you want to go look it up. Yeah. You can look up Bill Kristol fight at Crooks and Liars. And they got into a yelling match.
Yeah.
Over, and Bill Kristol attempting to remember, you know, no fair remembering stuff.
Right.
How many times Mika and Joe had a phone-in interview with Donald Trump.
With their very good friend and the man who ran the club where they carried on their little, you know.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, Scarborough was a member there in 2014, 15.
Yeah.
He took his kids there for Christmas to Mar-a-Lago.
But Kristol was saying, no, you had him on the show. You were very hard on him. And they both said, no, we were very hard on him. We hung up on him that one time.
We hung up on him once. Yes.
I mean, Bill Kristol deeply participated in building the infrastructure that made Trump possible.
He picked Sarah Palin. Yeah. As the vice president.
Well,
and Mika Brzezinski hosted Donald Trump fashion shows in New York City.
Because they truly thought this would never happen.
Yeah.
This couldn't possibly happen. And that all that tells me, and that all that has told me since I started writing this blog is the people who least understood the Republican Party were Republican elites.
Mm-hmm.
They just never got it. We were telling them what their base was like the entire fucking time. They would not listen until the base created Donald Trump. And suddenly everyone's interested in not being named a Republican, blaming other Republicans, not them, and basically just not talking about it anymore. And let's all look the other way because it had nothing to do with me.
And I really don't think we've emphasized enough how much electing Donald Trump and nominating Donald Trump was a gigantic fuck you from the base.
Yes.
To the elites.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You are trying to get us to elect another Bush.
Yeah. We don't want that.
Bush made us look like shit.
Right.
The second Bush, right?
If that were their only motivation, you made us look like idiots by electing a Bush, and we followed him right down the hole. Mm-hmm. That's why we had to put on funny hats, pretend we were never there. Mm-hmm. So you humiliated us. Well, of course, you humiliated yourselves. You voted for him. You voted for him twice. We told you not to do that, and you went ahead and did it anyway. Mm-hmm. But if that were the only motivation, it could have been anybody but Trump. But they were also stupid and angry.
And addicted to Fox, and Fox was the campaign arm of the Trump campaign.
And racist.
And racist.
And that's what Trump offered them. He offered them a repository for everything they hated about minorities and black people and Mexicans and women. He hated all those people because he learned the language of the Republican base. He learned it from Rush Limbaugh and people like that.
And watching Fox all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Trump won. And truth be told, my interest in tracking every hard right conservative swearing that maybe they'd seen the Republican Party once at a bus stop, but couldn't be sure. My interest in tracking that kind of waned a little bit because we had much bigger fish to fry. I can say that in December of 2017, I noticed that Brett Stevens of the New York fucking Times was among those who was now adding a temporal dimension to the big lie they were all telling. He started to put timestamps on this stuff. Quote, "For so much of my political life, I've just been sort of consistently and instinctively on the side of the Republican Party. That's when it was a matter of the sort of policies they were espousing, especially a version of the Republican Party that was about free trade, enterprise, openness, democracy, human rights, and so on. You know, that imaginary party that none of the base ever believed."
Yeah.
Back to Brett Stevens. "That party, incredibly, in the space of just a year and a half, no longer exists," unquote. Yep, just like that. Boom.
Republicans, seen it. The party of human rights.
Yeah. And nobody could have seen it coming. They just spontaneously a year and a half ago just went away. And there was no precursor. There was no knowledge. Nobody could have predicted it. Blah, 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 blah.
But Brett Stevens was onto something.
Yeah.
Because the summer of 2016 was now that official demarcation wall, moat, alligators, et cetera, between the before time when everything was Jake and the after time when everything suddenly turned to shit. And nothing that happened prior to 2016 had anything whatsoever to do with anything that happened during or after 2016, said no competent historian ever.
Yeah. And the thing was, this is the part that, you know, we harp on to the point of obsession on my part, I realize, but they were all in on it. All of them. This 18 months to 2 years window became the official Beltway approved absolution lifeboat. And all the Republican scumbags who reaped enormous rewards for decades, paving the road down which Donald Trump shambled to the White House, who were now frantically rebranding themselves as independent 30 years too late. They were all scrambling to get on board.
This was Joe Scarborough in December of 2017. Quote, Republicans across the United States will now pay a heavy price for 2 years of moral indifference, unquote.
Tough talk from Joe.
Also the month that Charlie Sykes got an entire guest column in the New York fucking Times. This is the guy, you know, who was right-wing, Midwest answer to Rush Limbaugh. He's the reason Wisconsin doesn't have high-speed rail. He was a shock jock on Wisconsin radio for the right. And he got a guest column in the New York fucking Times to warn that, quote, party's leaders will desperately try to pretend that this is not a tragedy and that they were not the ones who brought this upon themselves. Some of them will know better. But I suspect that in the final scene, they will be left with the question, what have we done? Unquote.
Yeah, well, they got over it, and now they're all in Trump's pocket. But again and again, any Republican who had access to a microphone and a camera or an op-ed column is now talking loudly about some unspecified group of other Republicans who are to blame for all of this. It's they and them, not me and us.
There were dozens more, lots of repeats. The same elite Republican pundits and opinion havers using the commanding media heights of the multiple platforms on which they were welcome, all hard selling that same lie that history began in 2016 over and over and over again.
So with those dates established, buckle up, because now we're going to quantum leap from a decade ago to just a few days ago to observe how deeply rooted in the everyday political language of Never Trumpers this detachment disorder has become, and how every other political event has been warped to fit that narrative. The occasion was the Bulwark's live thing in Los Angeles. There were big crowds, much merchandising, much call and response. A representative, a delegation from the Pod Save Lad showed up. And during the event, the Bulwark owner and publisher, Sarah Longwell, regaled her audience with her version of history. Now, this was Sam Stein asking a question, quote, what is the Bush line? Like, what actual number is the Bush line? And this is Sarah Longwell. This is a great question. It's 32%. But that is the number that George W. Bush was at when he left office, okay? And the reason, again, that this is important is that if you think about the historical precedent, when Bush left office, the Republican Party never recovered from his unpopularity, unquote.
Now, this is so ridiculous that we're not quite sure where to begin. In 2010, that is 2 years after Barack Obama was elected,
right,
Sarah Longwell was working for a conservative PR outfit in Washington, D.C. We assume she was helping to get Republicans elected. And she was recruited into the Log Cabin Republicans, which she eventually became chair of the Log Cabin Republicans. From that vantage point, surely she could not have missed the giant red wave that deluged Washington in 2010. and completely reverse the political fortunes of her Republican Party.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know exactly how Ms. Longwell would measure recovered popularity, but it seems to us that taking back the House in 2010 with a net gain of 63 seats, that's the largest turnover of seats by either party since 1948, constitutes a pretty good metric of resurgent popularity. So did the net 7-seat Republican pickup at the Senate and a pickup of 6 governorships, 680 state legislative seats, flipping control of 20 legislative chambers across the country, and having those independent voters say
with people look
out, having those independents who had largely voted for Democrats in 2006 and 2008 swinging overwhelmingly to the right.
And how did Sarah Longwell's party achieve this amazing feat? Pretty much by lying about Obamacare, but also by throwing everything they had into the largest coordinated campaign of often openly racist slander, obstruction, sabotage, and fear-mongering in modern political history, all aimed at destroying Obama before he even got started. And it was coordinated and well-funded.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
If you're interested in the gory details, we did a whole podcast about this very subject of 2008 and how we got from Obama to Trump last week.
Yes, we did. So go listen to that and then come back here. Now, add to that the massive Republican Tea Party branding scam in which the legacy media abetted the lie that somehow the base of the party had just up and disappeared one day like a fart in a firestorm and had been replaced by a brand new movement heavily financed by the Kochs and promoted around the clock by Fox News. Now, these teabaggers had two things in common. First, they swore they'd never heard of George W. Bush. And second, they despised the black guy in the White House and eagerly rallied behind every racist lie about death panels and government takeovers and birth certificates and on and on and on. They flooded town hall meetings shrieking about communists. And suddenly, they all cared about the goddamn deficit.
You mean the deficit? No, don't, we did a whole podcast about that.
Yeah.
about the Clinton surplus being pissed away by George W. Bush. All right. In Congress, Republicans did everything they could to drag the Great Recession out as long as possible, ferociously opposing the Obama plan for saving the economy, extorting concessions so that the final package was only half the size it should have been. And a third of that was tax cuts. And again, the legacy media helped water down the Obama solution to the deficit.
By saying recession.
It was too big, we're doing too much too fast, etc.
His solution to the recession, not the deficit.
Recession, the recession. Yeah. Obama's solution to the recession. I remember Paul Krugman on ABC's news this week. And, you know, George Will, which is, oh, well, if all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And they're just throwing money at everything and having to cut it back. Anyway, a third of the plan became tax cuts because Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't matter because they voted against everything along party lines. So by 2010, with the Republican base absolutely rage drunk on Fox News racist propaganda and hapless independents, terrified by the legacy media repeating conservative lies unchallenged, because we have to promote and report.
Right.
The view from nowhere. We're just reporting on both sides here.
There's a lot of controversial issues to be
said. The controversial solution to the recession.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the Republican Party was able to grab hold of real levers of power by taking over the Congress. And not only at the national level, but at the state level. And they used that power to further hobble Obama's initiatives.
Yeah. Remember, we're stuck in two wars, one of which we were overtly lied into that we're losing. Mm-hmm. And the Great Recession is just dragging on and on. And their top priority was trying to destroy the guy who we all elected to try to fix this shit and lie about it. So back to Ms. Sarah Longwell. She continues, quote, he, that's Bush, had a bad war and he had a bad economy. That sounds familiar, right? And so when you have those things, what happens is then the Republicans went into the wilderness. They lost 2 national elections. They struggled with their political identity only to have Trump then come in and completely revamp the party, unquote. Okay, first thing, notice the pronouns. It's the same sleight of hand as a decade earlier. It's the Republicans went, and they lost, and they struggled, not we lost or we struggled.
Second, in the Republican voters' berserk reaction and racist reaction to Barack Hussein Obama, their eight-year-long racist primal scream, it's painfully obvious that their political identity was right there in plain sight for anyone who cared to see. They were already racist.
They had
before
a very...
Trump came down the escalator and talked about rapists and Mexico.
All you had to do was listen to Rush Limbaugh for a week, and you knew what the Republican Party's political identity was. It was very clear what it was.
Yeah. And the call-ins were all ditto, you know, right. Mm-hmm. They all believed in him.
And the only people who didn't understand the political identity of the Republican base were people like Sarah Longwell.
Yeah, and David Brooks. I don't know what Rush Limbaugh's talking about. He said on the PBS NewsHour.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, right. Once a reality show douchebag and skeevy real estate slimeball named Donald Trump latched onto the biggest and most overtly racist lie of that era and ran with it. From Politico. Politico, August 4th, 2010. Quote, 41% of GOP Obama foreign-born birthers.
Uh-huh.
On President Barack Obama's birthday, a new CNN opinion research poll released Wednesday shows 41% of Republicans believe Obama was probably or definitely born in another country, unquote. So it's very clear that the plurality of the party had no political identity problem at all.
No, it's very clear who they were.
Stupid racist is who they are.
Yeah, and of course, the people who refuse to listen to the crackpot liberals who were warning them are the same people who now, you know, dominate the media. Now, stack that big stupid lie on top of all the other big stupid lies Republicans believe. For example, from PolitiFact, December 18th, 2009, quote, PolitiFact's lie of the year, death panels, unquote.
And also from PolitiFact, December 17th, 2010, PolitiFact's lie of the year, a government takeover of healthcare, unquote.
And from Pew, November 2nd, 2010, quote, majority of Republicans no longer see evidence of global warming. A 53% majority of Republicans say there's no solid evidence the Earth is warming. Among Tea Party Republicans, fully 70% say there is no evidence, unquote.
Add to these big, stupid lies all the dozens of smaller stupid lies that were fire-hosing out of the conservative media puke funnel, hyped by Republican Party leaders and passed along uncritically by the legacy media. And even low-born liberal bloggers from the middle of middle America like us could see that this was not a party lost in the political wilderness in any way. In fact, the political identity of the Republican Party was never in question at all.
Yeah, this might be the reason, Blue Gal, why Tim Miller and so many of his people labored over their own autopsy after 2012. And mm-hmm. Trump just wiped his ass with it.
Yeah.
This isn't the fucking Republican Party. What are you talking about? This is not the Republican Party.
Welcoming more Hispanics into the party? Are you kidding me?
We need to be more moderate, reach out to women and minorities. Like, no, that's not the party you built. I know the party you built. I am the party you built. And that's why he was so successful.
Yeah.
They were and are the same mob of bigots and imbeciles that we liberals have been warning about for decades. They are the reprogrammable meatbags, which the GOP has spent decades and billions of dollars cultivating, and about which we've been talking on this here blog for going on 1,000 episodes now.
Yeah. And you're never going to win them back.
No. Persuasion. Come on now. Get real about what you built and the results of it, and then we can talk. But as long as you continue to pretend that it never happened, that you were no part of it, there's no reason in the world for anyone to trust you, because we all know you were part of it, and we all know why you're lying about it.
And the reason that every part of the Republican Party is now rolling back the Voting Rights Act is because they fucking voted for that.
Right.
That's what they are.
Yeah. Those are the voters you spent all that time getting on board into your party and locking down and letting them listen to Rush Limbaugh and going on Fox News and being guests on Rush Limbaugh and having Glenn Beck be your friend and having all of it. The whole media apparatus that you were a part of, a willing, knowing part of, you went along with, is the reason why all this shit's happening. And yet, back in the before time, when it might have actually mattered, not a single person who now identifies as a Never Trumper you can name had any problem with any of this shit. They were perfectly willing to ride this rage and racism-fueled rocket as long as it took them where they wanted to go, as long as it got their guys elected. Which is why Ms. Longwell's notion that Trump came in, completely revamped the party, is not just laughable, but it's exactly backward. Trump didn't change the party. Trump revealed the party. The base wasn't bamboozled by Trump. The base manifested Trump as an avatar of their truest selves.
Yeah. They loved him because he was a birther.
Yeah, because he was them. Because he was them.
Was them. Because they're birthers too. Mm-hmm. And they hated the Voting Rights Act. And they hate modernity. Mm-hmm. They hate equal rights. They want to run the country and have it be a white nation.
Yeah.
And they are racist and stupid.
Yes. And they vote.
And they vote. And that's the shame Never Trumpers refuse to face. That they built the Republican electoral meth lab. And they supplied the chemicals. They created the distribution network. All Trump ever did was use their own meth lab and their own chemicals to cook their own product, purer and better than they did.
Yeah.
He reflects what they were already hearing all the time.
Without all that kind of toe-scuffing apology and pretend to be concerned about deficits and all the other bullshit, the base was like, okay, we have to eat our spinach before we can get to the good shit. So he just took all that off the table. No, it's dessert and red meat all the time with him. Right. And that's why they love him. So we go back to Ms. Longwell for her solution to this problem. Quote, but like the one way that Republican Party might become something that is not a criminal enterprise, that's not like an authoritarian fascist enterprise, the one way that it would happen is for Donald Trump to leave office with America going, that fucking sucked. Like, we don't want to do that again. We want to discredit Trump and everybody in his administration, right? You want Rubio and J.D. Vance to wear Trump like an albatross around their necks, unquote. Great. And best of luck with that.
That's adorable.
That's adorable. We really, no kidding, sincerely hope that it works. However, since we've been to this rodeo more than once, we kind of feel it's our duty to mention that prior to Donald Trump, the previous worst president in modern American history was a guy named George W. Bush, after whom Ms. Longwell's Bush line is in fact named. And after he left office, there was a broad consensus that, goddamn, that was awful. And golly, we sure don't want to do that again, right?
And yet, in the blink of an eye, the Republican base had scuttled through the Bush off machine and was reborn as a brand new political movement, the blameless, patriotic teabaggers.
And all those conservative hacks and henchmen in the media all kept their jobs or got promotions, and many of the Bush administration's loudest cheerleaders were rewarded with positions at The Atlantic and The Washington Post and The New York fucking Times.
Overnight, the entire conservative media machine became the very loud, very racist, and very profitable voice of the resistance against Barack Obama.
Yeah, it was a righteous fight, and we're all in on it now, and they made a shit ton of money hating the black guy in the White House. Ann Coulter went right on making scads of cash writing garbage.
Just before Obama took office in 2008, Rush Limbaugh signed a $400 million 8-year deal.
So he wasn't wandering in the wilderness wondering
about
his future.
No, he was not wandering in the wilderness. No. He had a job to do for 8 years.
Yeah.
And it was to destroy Obama.
Yeah, it was great being a Republican during the Obama years, because you could just be as awful and as shitty, and every one of the Never Trumpers were okay with that. Bush's go-to torture apologist, John Yoo, was appointed the Emanuel S. Heller Professor at UC Berkeley Law.
Paul Spitcomb Wolfowitz was gifted the presidency of the World Bank.
Yeah, he blew it after having an affair with somebody, but they gave him that job. They sure as hell did. Dick Cheney's mini-me spawn, Liz, was elected to the House and quickly rose to a leadership position by telling what? Monstrous toxic lies, just like dear old dad.
A bunch of them started very lucrative media companies like the Bulwark and the Lincoln Project.
Yeah.
Once Trump was elected. Yeah.
Which are subsidiaries of MSNBC. Let's face it. And as far as we can tell, most of the rest of them ended up being reelected to Congress or became regular MSNBC contributors or were given their own shows on MSNBC.
And we see no reason why the people with the megaphones wouldn't rerun the process of mass strategic forgettery and ouchless absolution post-Trump. just like they did post George W. They're going to build a machine to make it all go away.
To forgive the base,
yep,
and let everyone possible off the hook and name a few bad apples and then just get right back to the business of it being both sides. That's the future, unless we on the left stop it. And this is why we say, what do we say, Blue Gal? Burn the lifeboat. Burn the goddamn lifeboat.
And watch for it. Watch for that well-funded movement.
Oh, it's already there. I mean,
and call it out. Well, it doesn't have a name yet.
Well, but we can call it Kelly's Heroes. How's that? Because Megyn Kelly is suddenly talking about, you know, Donald Trump is more corrupt than I thought he was, because she thought he'd be, you know, really corrupt,
but corrupt.
Not super villain corrupt.
She says the corruption is much more widespread than I thought it would be.
Oh, and we should mention
she endorsed Trump in 2024.
And now that we're nearing an hour of this lovely conversation, I do miss when we don't podcast, I do miss it. Yeah. The news roundup will return next week, where we'll just spit headlines at you for an hour.
No, I don't think it'll happen. But sometimes we do have headlines to talk about, but not today, people. Each week, though, we post to our Patreon page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Lily.
Aw.
Lily is so sweet, and Lily's human notes, Lily is 4 years old. We adopted her from a rescue at 12 weeks old. She was found by a dumpster, and she had head wounds, and they fixed her up at the rescue shelter. And now, according to her vet, she is immaculate.
Oh.
Lily is immaculate. Lily is also a certified emotional support animal. And Lily needs support as much as she gives it. She is beautiful, sweet, and sassy, but still anxious at times. And that's okay, Lily. We understand having a little bit of anxiety these days. That's all right. Of course, Lily eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured.
Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. That's the flavor they adore. One small scoop and hearts are sore. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured.
Oh yeah.
And you can visit Lily at our Patreon page, patreon.com/proleftpod, or our website, proleftpod.com. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write to us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
And we went over our gourmet coffee guidelines at the top of the show, and we're expecting a nice fat check from Paul Krugman and Jonathan Glass to balm their conscience, which should be bothering them very much. And this is, we will absolve you, okay? Very much like Never Trumpers absolve you, we'll absolve you of your guilt.
All you have to do is cross Driftglass's palm with a $5 bill.
All I got to do, well, you know, Krugman's got a couple of bucks stashed away. He's got that New York Times retirement plan, so I think he's doing okay. And I hear the Bulwark is crazy profitable. So, John Last, you just dip into, no one will notice if you take $100 out of the coffee fund.
You don't like the word controversial. Where'd you figure that out?
Yeah. So go over to the coffee fund, you know, that little pot where they put their money, grab $100, send it to us, and we'll call it square. Okay. So the only thing left for me to do is to ask you all to help continue to grow by sharing our show on social media. I'm sure you all know somebody who would like to hear what we have to say. Or hate us and want to comment on how awful we are and how we are the problem. Either way, stick a set of headphones on them and make them listen to us, and that'll help us very much. Thank you for keeping it going.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties believe that three-day weekends are at least 4 days too short.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is produced and recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright DGBG Productions. ProLeftPod.com.